Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Think about the children's books that have graced your bedtimes. The dog-eared, well-thumbed picture books, host to colorful or creepy menageries of familiar friends and well-meaning monsters. Recall the storybooks and biographies that gave you vicarious thrills based on lives real and imagined. Now think about how many of your favorites were the stars of their day, anointed by a panel and blessed with the book world's equivalent of a good housekeeping seal of approval, Children's Book Awards, specifically the Caldecott for Picture Books and the Newbery for Children's Literature, are the two most prestigious medals a kid's book can boast. They promise bestseller status and prominent placement in bookstores and libraries. But if a shiny gold sticker on a book cover is a guaranteed sale, it's no guarantee that your kid will like what's inside. Today on The Connection, a conversation about just how well-served parents are when they rely on book awards to help determine which books to buy for their children. Beyond the bestsellers, where should parents look for other quality reads? Now, this is a special recorded broadcast of The Connection, so we won't be taking your phone calls. Instead, we invite you to settle in with your radio and just enjoy the show. Now, as always, you're welcome to join the conversation online in the forum section of our website at www.theconnection.org. And also at our website, you'll find a list of and links to some of the books that we'll be talking about on today's program. My guests today are two of the brightest lights from the world of children's literature. Eden Ross Lipson is the children's book editor of the New York Times, and Roger Sutton is editor-in-chief of the Horn Book Magazine. They're both with me in our Boston studio. I feel privileged to have the two of you in the same room at the same time.
It's nice to be
Thanks
here.
Thanks for having us.
Now, next month, the Newbery and the Caldecott, sometime, I guess, Eden, in the middle of the month is when we should expect.
Just towards the middle.
Whoever chose the middle of January is a time to announce the award winners. You would have thought that sometime in the, maybe a month or 6 weeks before Christmas, they'd put those little gold seals on, no?
Ah, other little gold seals go on, but that's another part of the story. It's a movable feast. The Newbery and Caldecott are given by the American Library Association, and the timing is based on their midwinter meeting. They're announced at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, so that the negotiations have gone on over the weekend of the Librarians Committee. Roger can tell you about that. The winners appear on the Today Show the next day, but they make their acceptance speeches at the great big national full-blown, full-scale Librarians Convention, which takes place about the end of June.
And the books, I guess, go off like skyrockets the moment their mugs appear on the Today Show.
And a traditional part of the acceptance speech for both of those awards is the honoree says where they were when they got the news, because it's usually very early in the morning and they get a phone call from the chair of the committee telling them that they've won.
And Roger prints the speeches in the Horn Book.
Now, the Horn Book Magazine, we should just pause for this for a minute, because it's not something that I've ever seen on the table in my dentist's office, but I gather
this is... You go to the wrong dentist.
This is quite an important part of children's literature, certainly in this country. Maybe, Eden, you should say something about it if Roger's going to be modest on
No,
this.
Roger won't be modest. He'll tell you the history.
Well, it started as a project of the Women's Educational and Industrial Union here in Boston. It's about 81 years old, I think, this year. Comes out six times a year, articles about children's books, reviews of the best, what we think are the best new books of the year, sometimes coinciding with the books that win awards and sometimes not.
How does the American Library Association decide who's going to win the Newbery, who's going to win the Caldecott? Are they just the books that sold the most copies in the year prior
No.
to that? No.
It's a fairly elaborate sequence. There's a committee of 15 librarians for each of the awards. Half of the members are elected, half are appointed. The chair, and then there's a chair who was also elected.
Who casts a deciding vote in case there's a tie?
Could be. and then there's a whole system of balloting that takes place. And they discuss through the year the books as they come out. And then at this midwinter meeting, they have marathon sessions. I was on it the year that Holes by Lewis Sacker won the Newbery. And there's an elaborate system of weighted ballots that are taken periodically, at which point certain books are simply moved off the table and out of the discussion. It just gets smaller and smaller.
Sounds like
and
presidential
smaller.
Primaries. Yeah.
It's incredibly elaborate. I'm not a trained librarian, so I've only heard the outside discrete accounts of it. But compare that with the New York Times Best Illustrated Award, which is chosen by three judges, a librarian, a critic, and an artist, different every year. Roger's done that. He can, and I swear people to secrecy before they come into the room and then tell them to say everything that went on. But there in mid-afternoon, after looking at hundreds of picture books together for the first time, I traditionally ask them to vote affirmatively, not cast things out, but put things in. What do you love most? And some years we get six or seven on the very first ballot, but they go to 10.
Can I ask you both about, and I should explain to our listeners that the table, the connection table that I have my elbows on right now, looks more like the floor of a library after a snow day at school. It's really scattered with books and
looks
delightful
ones.
Yeah. But I wanted to ask you about one in particular, which has been spoken about and written about all through the year. This is Peter Cis. Do I pronounce the name right?
Cis?
Cis. Peter Cis's book, The Tree of Life. And it's the illustrated picture book about Charles Darwin, because there's nothing very children-like, there's nothing very picture book-like, there's nothing very narrative about the story. It's almost like looking at an atlas of Darwin's life with drawings of his vessels and maps of the islands that he explored. Why is this book attracting
well,
so much attention?
I mean, what I love about this book so much is that I think that it looks at Darwin the way Darwin looked at the world.
Ah.
And that kids, readers, whoever reads this, has to make the connections for himself or herself and has to determine what matters most. The powers of observation required by the viewer reader, I think, are phenomenal.
And what would draw a child to want to spend that time with the book then, Eden? I mean, what's the hook here?
Keep your hands on the page that you've got it open to,
right,
in which there are
32 little squares on two open pages.
32 squares, right, in two open pages, each representing something from, I think this is that something seen on the voyage of the Beagle or some aspect of that experience annotated. Children today
Let me pick
are,
one and just
sure.
read it for our listeners here. This says, August, back to Punta Alta, where we found fossils a year ago. We now discovered a skeleton the size of a horse, carefully excavated it from the cliff face, labeled and cataloged the bones and packed them for shipment home, along with little sketches of this happening. That's just one of
bits of the bones. And
right.
above it is something that looks, from where I'm sitting, sort of like a dodo.
It says avestruz petis, but maybe that's Latin for dodo. I'm not sure.
But the point is that contemporary children are visually very sophisticated. Mm. Remember, they are exposed to computers, to games, to media, all sorts of things. And children of all sorts see pictures much more clearly than adults do. And the eye will fall on one thing, and one thing can open the door. There's a question of who this book is for. In many ways, it's much more accessible to adults who know who Darwin mm-hmm. was, who are interested in the grand scheme. And there's a fabulous double-page spread in which the theory is laid out. But if you're an 8 or 9-year-old, and it's a rainy day, and you sit down and you pick this up and, oh, look at those armadillos. And there's someone leaping on a horseback above that mm-hmm. armadillo. Mm-hmm. And then above that, there's somebody with a volcano behind them. I'm just looking up one column of the pictures.
Exactly.
But turn the page. It, as Roger said, it's available to children wherever they enter and however much they wish to bring to it or take from it. It would be a great book to leave around and watch the way different people of different ages.
Isn't it funny that, though, that I think when we talk about children's literature, think first of bedtime and something that, you know, our
this
parent would say.
Bedtime.
No, not at all.
No.
Right? Which is one of the first reasons why I thought, huh, what is this?
Although it is the kind of book to just sit and contemplate. And in that way, it's a bedtime book for a child to read for himself. I mean, I would have loved this book, I think, as an 8-year-old.
Exactly.
Just to sit in bed looking at these pictures, wondering about what I was looking at. It's fabulous for that.
Tell me something, though. When the committees of librarians sit down to decide whether or not this qualifies for consideration for the Caldecott, because it's more picture book than literature?
That's an interesting question.
It's funny you should mention that.
Ah, okay.
Who knows?
It gets deeper.
There is one example of a book that won the Newbery and the Caldecott in the same year.
Which one was that?
Visit to William Blake's Inn.
I don't know the book, but I was thinking earlier, before the two of you came in, how you do draw the line. For example, I think of my Winnie the Pooh books as a kid, and I can see those pen and ink drawings even more clearly than I can remember my mother and father reading the text to me. I'm thinking, is that a picture book? Is it literature?
But that's the great point, and I always quote Carla Kuskin. A great picture book, a great children's book, is more like opera than anything else. You can't separate the text and the illustrations. They're completely meshed in the mind of the reader, the child or adult, which is why people care so much about giving the books that they loved as children to the children that they love, because you can see Winnie the Pooh, you can see James Morrison, even as I'm looking in your eyes, you're seeing that
King
little
John's boy. Christmas, right. That's right.
But it's different, because at the same time you can read Winnie the Pooh out loud to a child and he or she can form a picture of what those characters look like to him. I didn't have an illustrated edition of Where the Wild of Wind in the Willows.
Right.
There's another great example. Because I knew what Water Rat looked like.
He was a fabulous word painter.
Yeah.
You know, as an author, Winnie the Pooh succeeds as a book aside from its pictures, and it's been illustrated by different people too, over the years. Whereas the Tree of Life, you can't take the pictures away, you can't take the text away. They work together.
And then the people on the committees will say, yes, it's a picture book, yes, it's literature, it could be one, it could be the other, it could be both, right? It doesn't have to fall into just one category or the other.
Well, the distinction that they always have to make is it, because we're assuming the book has pictures, all the books that they're looking at, but is it an illustrated book or is it a picture book? Because the award goes to the artist of a picture book. For example, you've got a David McCauley book over there, Mosque.
Oh, right. We had David in, I think, about this time last year.
That's right, perhaps on a program that we were doing. We were talking together.
Is that an illustrated book or is that a picture book? I mean, David McCauley won acclaim for years and years and years, but never a Caldecott medal until he did a traditional
picture book.
As traditional as David McCauley could be. I mean, it was certainly offbeat and eccentric, but...
Now, was that for Cathedral, or was that for this one?
Now we're going to forget the title.
Castle? What have we got here? Cathedral, City, Pyramid, Underground, Castle.
No, these are all the didactic books. I can see the cover of the cows.
Right, and it's got the three stories going on.
We actually have to take a break. We're going to come back, and when we do come back, we'll have the book. Just a reminder to our listeners, you're listening to a special edition of... The Connection. With me in the studio, Eden Ross-Lipson and Roger Sutton. We're talking about books and the awards that are given to them. And if you'd like to know more about the books, you can find images and links to them on our webpage. We're at theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. With me in the studio here in Boston, Roger Sutton, editor-in-chief of the Horn Book Magazine, and lots of time under his belt as a judge for National Book Awards for Young People's Literature, the Newbery Medal Committee, the New York Times Best Illustrated Books. Eden Ross-Lipson is also back on The Connection. She is children's book editor of the New York Times and author of the New York Times Parents' Guide to the Best Books for Children, which is really where we want to end up at some point on the program today, because we're talking about awards and what awards mean. The Caldecott and the Newbery are going to be awarded in the middle of next month. Those are little gold seals that goes on the book that guarantee sales. And I guess, Roger, in part because when the librarians choose a book and put that little gold sticker on, the librarians themselves then go out and buy a bunch of the books.
Sure, that's part of it. But also it's an imprimatur. Gee, if librarians like it, it must be good. But just because a book wins the Newbery or the Caldecott doesn't mean it's right for your child.
But
there's that desperate urge and need that parents feel to have someone tell them. The two hardest parts of the bookstore to work in are computers and children's books. Everybody wants to be told.
I thought the self-help was going to be one of the sections.
And
I'm one of those people. I have nieces and nephews who live on the other side of the country. I don't see them very much. I love giving books, but I'm not really sure where they are. And so one of my defaults is always to go with the gold sticker. And Roger, what you're saying is that I need to be a little more careful than that.
Well, you have to remember that the librarians are not, for one thing, they don't know your niece and nephews.
Right.
They're not thinking of their particular interests. But it's also not an award for child appeal. It's for the most distinguished contribution to American literature for children, in the case of the Newbery.
But even if they're not judging child appeal, what are they basing their judgment on?
Oh, they have lots of criteria. But I'm going to do a little tiny piece of self-promotion. And the reason that my book went into three editions is that the premise is that you know your niece and nephew and the children. And that, as Beverly Cleary said, you don't want to choose a book like a winter coat. It shouldn't be one size too big. Mm-hmm. So what I did was set up 55 different indexes so that you could find books by age level, by topical interest, by cross-reference notions of a bedtime, read aloud, adventure, divorce, and dinosaurs. The criteria that the librarians use are both simpler and much more rigid. If I were being very irreverent, I could say not unlike No Child Left Behind. I mean, one slip and you've fallen off the wagon. You're left behind. A book can't be included if the typefaces does not meet some criteria. Or
I think you're getting into folklore here, though, too. I mean, the award is for an aesthetic contribution to
literature.
Right,
and I've never been part of it. I have to say it's only what I've heard. But keep going.
Right, that this book is the wrong size for a child to read in bed at night. I mean, there are all kinds of stories.
And ethnicity matters, and that you cannot write a book about an ethnic group that you don't belong to.
Can I ask about one? There's one that I've seen written about called The Canning Season by Polly Horvath, very well-known writer, but it's got the F word in it.
Mm-hmm.
And almost every reference
to be seen.
We were talking about that in the office and trying to remember if there had ever been a Newbery winner or honor book that had the F word in it.
And honor book used to be called a runner-up, right?
It is a runner-up, but now they call them honor books.
Silver sticker.
Yeah, silver sticker. And we've seen Dammits, but I don't think we've seen the S word or the F word.
And so does that mean that this is going to have big marks against
it? Who's to say? You know, the deliberations are secret. We'll never know.
They're never discussed afterwards.
It's all confidential. I can't tell you how we chose the book we chose when I was on it. I can't tell you what else we looked at very closely.
But you can tell all about when you did the best illustrated books at the time.
I can spill all, sure. But, you know, they could have had, if they did not select this book, it could simply be they liked another book more. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't, but it would be interesting if a book that had the F word won the Newbery Medal. You know, it presents librarians with the same problem they had when Madonna published Sex, that most librarians buy books that are listed on the New York Times bestseller list as part of their selection policy. We will buy everything on that list. But Sex, which had explicit photographs, et cetera, in it, caused a problem, you know, for some of these libraries,
as could this. And when you have a committee that's making a decision, I mean, you take some of the roll of the dice away from that decision. You take away the opportunity to be bold, to make some kind of a statement, to reward something that has particular appeal to you, Eden. I mean, maybe that's a good thing.
Well, there's a confusion. People who work with books tend to want there to be more prizes and more celebrations than not. Because in this media-mad world, books are at the center. They're certainly what propel and give the ideas behind all sorts of other media, but they're very small. It's a small business. It doesn't get as much attention anywhere. And prizes get listed, get picked up on the wire services, mm-hmm. get books with prize stickers of any sort are more likely to be bought. As you said, you look for a sticker. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of other stickers. There's the Boston Globe Horn Book. There's the National Book Award.
There's just one for kids' books in the yeah. National Book Awards, yeah. right?
And then it gets confusing. One book. Well, the point about children's books as opposed to adult fiction or nonfiction is that a 2-year-old is different from a 5-year-old, mm-hmm. is different from a 7-year-old or a 9-year-old. Apples, oranges, raisins, and pears. And when the prize goes to a book for an 8-year-old, it's not appropriate for an 11-year-old or a toddler. It's a very complicated business, just on the illustrated side.
Can I ask about, sure. about one book here? This is one that's in front of me. The Man Who Walked Between the Towers, Mordecai Gerstein. Did I pronounce his last name right?
Gerstein,
yeah. I flipped through the book and was charmed by the illustrations in the book. It really is quite a beautiful book to hold and to look at. But I was thinking as I looked at it, it's a story about Philippe Petit, the tightrope walker who actually did string a high wire between the World Trade Center towers and walked across them. We actually featured that story in one of our after-the-fact broadcasts about the two towers. But I was trying to remember if I had ever seen a book, children's book, and a picture book, that was tied to current events in the way that this one was, and wondering if I was missing something here.
Well, one of my favorite books from last year was Myra Kalman's Fireboat, which was also about the World Trade Center attacks and a brave little fireboat that came to the rescue.
Okay,
it's a
nonfiction, right.
true story.
Yeah.
The Charles, what was the name of the boat? I can't remember.
Lost it.
That was brought back into service to fight the fire. But this is a much more younger child's book than that one was. I mean, that actually had paintings of the explosion. And this is not about the attacks on the Trade Center. It's about this acrobat put in a context of a world where we no longer have these buildings to walk between.
Which is only just nodded to at the very end of the book, because it doesn't actually end with an illustration of the buildings not there. It ends with an illustration of the buildings almost not there. It's really quite clever the way the illustrator has done that. But when you talk about a contribution to literature, this will have appeal, perhaps, to parents first and children second. There's a way of talking about the two towers. There's a story that we can... You know, that we can manage, but the parent brings to that the same sort of baggage that I do. 2.5 years of thinking about it and broadcasting about it, and what does it mean, and where does it fit in our own consciousness?
I think it's a remarkably beautiful book. The angles of vision, the conceptual angles at which the story is told, looking up, looking down, looking across. Seeing, there's the two wonderful double page spreads, fold out pages. But I genuinely wonder about who it's for. I haven't done it with young children. And every adult that I've shown it to has gasped and also remembered. But they're all adults. And
those are the folks who buy books, aren't they?
Exactly. That's where it gets very tricky. Those are the folks who buy books. I think it's a remarkable book, but I can't, and I use remarkable, worthy of discussion. And I'm very, very interested in seeing how it looks as time passes. Many of the books that we love best look as wonderful now so that we can't remember the world without them. It is, after all, the 40th anniversary of The Wild Things. We can't remember before there were Wild Things. I wonder how this particular book will look in 5 or 10 years. I suspect it will be around, mm-hmm. but I think it will look different as we mm-hmm. who gasped at the moment have gone on, and there are children who have for whom it's all distant. But I don't know.
And if you look back at Newbury's and Caldecott's, some of them survive and some of them don't. I mean,
some of them get very dated.
Secret
very
of
fast.
The Andes. You know, who's read that?
Which one? When?
Charlotte's Web was published
not,
the same
right,
year.
Yeah.
Charlotte's Web did not win, but that's the book that we right. remember.
There is. Let me turn, if I can, to one of the ones that might be considered by the folks doing the Newbery. This is the children's literature. Might be. Or is being, or will be. What do you
guys
think?
We don't know. We don't know.
Oh, don't be coy. You know more than you. What
Actually,
would you think?
We don't.
Do you think it's
I mean,
up there?
No.
This is I the tale of Despereaux.
I bet they're talking about
Kate DiCamillo's book.
Well, let's point out, the reason we can assume that it's at least being discussed is that her first novel, because of Winn-Dixie, was an enchanting surprise and got
an
honor
book. Wasn't it?
Right out of the bat. So you're talking about a young, engaging writer who has now gone into a very different world and offered a fantasy folktale, which has been, as we've seen a fair amount in recent years, very beautifully published with elegant paper, nice binding, very, very delicate decorations.
Can I read the way this book begins? Because it leads me to something I want to ask you both about. Chapter 1, called The Last One. This story begins within the walls of a castle with the birth of a mouse. A small mouse. The last mouse born to his parents and the only one of his litter to be born alive. "Where are my babies?" said the exhausted mother when the ordeal was through. "Show to me my babies." The father mouse held the one small mouse up high. "There is only this one," he said. "The others are dead." "Mon Dieu, just the one mouse baby?" "Just the one. Will you name him?" "All that work for nothing," said the mother. She sighed. "It is so sad. It is such the disappointment." She was a French mouse who had arrived at the castle long ago in the luggage of a visiting French diplomat. Disappointment was one of her favorite words. She used it often. "Will you name him?" repeated the father. "Will I name him? Will I name him? Of course I will name him. But he will only die like the others. Oh, so sad. Oh, such the tragedy." I read the first page and a half of that, and I thought, you know, a writer does need to get your attention by doing something unconventional. And that's the sort of opening to a book where I'd want to keep on going. To what extent does that first taste of a writer's story draw in a librarian who might be judging it for a prize, or a mother or a father who might be buying the book for their kid, or someone reviewing it for the Horn Book?
Well, that's right. I mean, I hear that and I think, oh, God, bad operetta. You know? So a lot of it's
interesting
taste.
I'm expecting a kid's book to be, oh, they're all happy, and, you know, this is about all the little dead mice, not the... Anyway, sorry. Eden.
Stop, cried Fern Arable. I mean, it is not
an unfamiliar
opening.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're right.
But you know,
so what does that make me, a sap? Maybe?
No, but what that says is that there's so much out there to choose from, and we want children to read many, many different kinds of books mm-hmm. that begin many different ways. We want them to read books that are easy. We want them to read books that are simple. We want them to read books that are exciting and hard and challenging, and some that are a little frightening and make them worry. We want them to read, and we'll do almost anything to put those books in front of them. Mm-hmm. And because it is parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles who buy them or who take the little ones to the library where they have access to books, it's terribly important that we send out the word whatever way we can. The prizes have enormous import because people who are in a hurry think, ah, a prize, good, it must be okay.
Right.
What's really concerning is that there's less and less reviewing. There's less and less critical discussion of children's books any place in this country.
But Eden, how many children's books, and I mean picture books and storybooks, come into your office in a given year?
4,000.
And you wonder why there's not more reviewing?
And we're seeing 6,000. Because we get a lot of institutional kinds of books that Eden doesn't get.
No.
Do you get books from overseas as well?
Mm-hmm.
Does that 4 and 6,000 number include?
No, not for me.
No.
Yeah,
I get a lot of self-published books, but that's another story.
The books that you handle.
Yes.
Yes, your book came, I handled it. How do you decide what it is that, that the two of you are going to look at? Because you are equally as influential as someone who's likely to give out an award. You're going to have an influence on the librarians who make these decisions.
Yes, and the Hornbook's influence greatly depends on the kind of book, the genre. Picture books are bought by parents in bookstores. But a novel, Olive's Ocean by Kevin Henkes, is here on the table, The Tale of Despereaux that you just read from, mm-hmm. those as hardcovers, until and unless they win awards, will be bought primarily by libraries. And that's where the Hornbook will have influence, because librarians will see a review in the Hornbook or won't see a review in the Hornbook and may make their selection decision based on
that. And book list.
There are only
a couple of other. Right. It's Hornbook, book list, school library, journal, book links.
Center for Children's Books. Kirkus Reviews to some extent.
Publishers Weekly, yeah. too, to some extent. And that's it.
And is the librarian more influential in raising the stature of a children's book than an adult book? I mean, are there more children in a school library or in a public library who are going to have access to a hardcover kids book than perhaps, an adult who'll pick it up at a, you know, bookstore in an airport? Do you see what I mean? Does a librarian have more influence over children's books than adult books, I guess is what I'm asking.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the power of a librarian who takes a class for an hour and picks the right books to read from and sees that the little kid in the corner who can't sit still but really paused at one page or one nugget might be interested in another book she knows about. I mean, those are incredibly potent links.
And the librarians who listen to the program are going to be delighted to hear that.
Well, and too, I mean, and in the old days, you know, before Eden and I were even born, there was considerable influence that the librarians were exercising on the publishing of children's books, that publishers would call certain influential librarians and say, do you think this will fly? And Ann Carroll Moore at the New York Public Library, for example, would say, oh, no, we don't approve of this sort of thing.
So don't write it. I won't put it on my shelf.
Exactly.
That's right. And that was very powerful.
You're listening to a special edition of The Connection. We're talking about children's books this hour. Next month, the awards are given to the book that will win, the Caldecott and the Newbery, but we're using that as an opportunity to talk about the way that we're supposed to look at books, the way that we can, as adults, help children choose books, or, and we'll get to this in the next part of the program, let the children choose the books all by themselves. And if you'd like a glimpse at the sort of books that we're talking about in the program today, you can find links and images on our website. We are at theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. You're listening to a special edition of The Connection this hour. We are recording this program, so we're not taking your calls, but in fact, it's the sort of program that you should be just pushing back your chair and listening in on. We're talking about children's literature. If you have a pen and paper in front of you, put it away. We're not doing lists this hour. We're simply talking about what works and what doesn't, the importance, the impact of awards, and how parents and children choose books. And I couldn't have two better people to help me with that. Eden Ross Lipson is children's book editor of the New York Times, also author of the New York Times Parents' Guide to the Best Books for Children. Roger Sutton, editor-in-chief of the Hornbook magazine, and has been a judge for a number of young people's literature books. That's for the National Book Award, as well as the Newbery Medal Committee, the New York Times Best Illustrated Books, and so on. And if you're interested in having just a glimpse at the books that we're talking about, you'll see links to them and some images on our website. We're at theconnection.org. We should, well, actually, Eden put it in quite a charming way just as we were between segments in the program. She said we should talk about books for kids who can't read, because I never think of it in that way. But, of course, that's a huge part of the market.
They're a huge part of the audience. And, you know, the important thing about reading with children is that children understand that it's really important. We always say it doesn't matter what you read to the little ones. In the largest sense, it doesn't, because what they understand is that it is so powerful and so exclusive and so important that you're not doing anything else. Hmm. You're not driving the car or doing the dishes or making the bed or whatever. You are holding this thing that has pictures. and somebody is sitting right next to you, and then the pictures click in, and the pictures are connected to the words, but you don't know how. And you have no history and no deep memory, so you can look at the pictures so much more closely than mommy or daddy or whoever's reading to you. And you see them and you think about them.
You also get to go back to them.
And you work them over until your parents are going out of their minds and think, if you read that one more time, I'm going to throw it out the window.
There's one here called The Babies, The Day the Babies Crawled Away by Peggy Rathman. And one of the things... Roger, that's striking about it is that all the illustrations are done in silhouette. It has mm-hmm. it has engaging little images of babies and is this a fireman? Eden, do you
good
know this one?
Good boy, you got it. Okay, the first clue is that the hero is the little boy in the fireman's helmet.
I passed.
But when I went through this book for the first time, I thought it was nice. I thought that kids would enjoy it. But it wasn't until staff, other editors at the Horn Book came back after using it with kids and said, did you see this in the picture? Did you see that in the picture? I didn't see it because I approached it as
here
a reader, not as a looker.
There's a caterpillar
There's
on
a
this
caterpillar.
Page. This is a picture of the fireman following babies up the hill. I don't see the caterpillar. Where's Waldo? No, he's not. I see 1, 2, 3, 4, five babies. Where's the caterpillar? You show me. Where's the caterpillar?
He's usually right next to the little boy, and
Oh, there is always a caterpillar.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
There's always a caterpillar. Where is he on this one?
And there's always an upside-down baby, too.
Yeah. Up
there. Which is the sort of thing, I've just turned the page,
right.
Because we haven't found the caterpillar. But,
there's see the upside down baby.
Got the upside
see the
down.
Baby with the corkscrew. See the baby with the butterfly hair and the butterflies
and the bonnet.
Run through. Right.
Yeah. And these are the things.
And if you're a little child who is what they call, I've lurched up and thrown the microphone off, who is what's called a lap listener.
Yeah.
You study that and you see what's happening off in the corner. There's a frog leaping after a butterfly in the far right corner. See
okay,
there?
But I have a question about this because on these two double pages, mm-hmm. as the babies are making their way across a swamp of bulrushes and there's a branch and others mm-hmm. are crawling out on that and I see frogs and whatnot, there are these words. They crawled in a bog chasing frogs.
Okay.
Now,
do you hear?
In the length of time it'll take you to read that and then turn the page for the next line, how much is the child going to take in? You
well,
see what
first I'm... of all, you don't have to rush.
That always makes parents nervous. Like in Where the Wild Things Are, where there are three spreads with no words, the parent doesn't know what to do.
Talk. I mean, do you see, look at the clouds? Where's the baby with the corkscrew curl? Is there a butterfly?
Right.
What is that baby doing upside down?
And so all of a sudden the words on the page don't really mean that much.
Well, you'll come back to them because they rhyme. And really little children love rhyme. Very simple, short words that rhyme. Because remember, you hear them late at night, just before they fall asleep, saying things over and over and working on the sounds and the connections.
A bit of girls.
And so they'll come back to it. And then you see them early in the morning or just before nap, sitting with the books, reading the words to themselves, although they're not reading at all, and looking for the ideas of the words. They have a wonderful time with their books.
I thought it was just a picture book. Now I have to look for the caterpillar. I will look for the caterpillar. Morris, the artist. Is it Laurie Siegel?
Laurie Siegel.
Laurie Siegel. Okay.
The great Laurie Siegel. Roger doesn't like this one. I do. It's the young Russian artist Boris Kulikov.
I'm going first to Roger then. What do you think?
Well, I felt it was a book that had a very small audience, and that audience was probably adult for the most part. I thought it was more a book about children than it was a book for children, which is a
but so hard for it not to be that if it's a book written and drawn by adults as most of them are. And Eden, this is your moment to dissent.
Well, it's a story about a little boy who really doesn't want to go to a birthday party, and he has to go.
He also doesn't want to give the present.
And he doesn't want to give the present. And what he really wants to do is paint and draw. And he persuades everybody that art is what they really want to do. And you have this very new artist who has these wonderfully angular children and images and a kind of Renaissance palette, and there's stuff going on in the corners that this is for the sort of 4 or 5 year old who's going to many too many birthday parties mm-hmm. and is having many too many tantrums and understands about tantrum behavior. And so there's a lot to look for on the signals of how to be naughty and how to be nice.
Can I come back to all the books that we've been talking about are books that have been considered or are being considered or might be considered for a number of
this
the awards.
This prize or that.
This prize or that. Whatever. But let's just be a little bit prescriptive here for a minute. For people who are looking for ways to choose books, you have both in the course of the past hour talked about these books in ways that I hadn't thought about them. As an adult or as somebody who might be buying the book. So what's, Roger, what are the sort of sage bits of advice you give to someone who's in a children's book section of the library or of a bookstore and is trying to figure out what a child might want?
I think it's really hard to choose books for other people. I think one of the best holiday presents you can give to a kid is to take them to a bookstore and say, let's look.
What a cool idea.
Rather than presenting something, because if it doesn't work, I mean, think about a picture book that costs $17, $18.95 or more. The kid goes through it once, and then it's forgotten and discarded.
It's a library book.
Is there a danger, Eden, of doing that and then having the biggest, brightest book pulled off the off the shelf?
Or the book that you've heard a commercial for or you've seen somebody on television. Yes. Here's my list, my injunctive list. On picture books, stand there and read it yourself. First of all, do the words fit the story? Mm-hmm. Can you read the words aloud? If they don't scan onto the page, put it back, because you might have to read it many, many times. Children have both great taste and terrible taste. They always want some truly disgusting book as well as all the things that you think are important. And why not? That's fine.
We had one, in fact, my brother and I have a brother who's a year older, and we went to the library, I think about once a week, we're allowed 2 books each, and we'd take turns checking out The Battle of the Frogs and the Mice. I don't know if you ever saw this book, but at about page 26, when they really get into it, the frogs and the mice are slicing each other in half. Right? So it's like being in an anatomy class, seeing bits of we loved this book, and we would bring it home, and my mother would go, why have you brought that book? But anyway,
absolutely.
It's an illustration.
Exactly, exactly. The other great gift you can bring children is to go to the library, take out as many books as you can carry, and the ones they don't want to take back are the ones to think about having at home, the ones that they take out over and over again that speak somewhere in their psyches. The gift certificates, if you can't go, you know, with a child, the gift certificate is also a useful thing. Make friends with librarians and clerks in good bookstores. They're your friends. The great gift is if you liked this, then you might like that. And listen to them. Listen to what they talk about. Listen to the books that they mention. Ask them. Children are wonderfully able to tell you what they like and what they don't like.
Can we close, though, with just a quick consideration of one book? And this is the Maurice Sendak, Tony Kushner book, Brundibar, which is based on an opera, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And Roger, it's about the Holocaust. It's about people getting sick and people fighting.
Well, to an adult, it's about the Holocaust. The story itself is not about the Holocaust. I mean, the historical circumstances of the opera, it was presented in a concentration camp by children, inmates of this concentration camp. But it's a story about the small defeating the strong.
It's a typical children's opera subject and text, and it's only when it's placed in Central Europe in the late 30s and early 40s and gold stars are put upon overcoats and you look at the organ grinder that it becomes a book about the Holocaust.
The organ grinder looks like Hitler.
Does that mean that what I might see in a book really doesn't have anything to do with what the child I'm reading it to would see in the book? Is that another part of this?
It can be. I mean, I think that adults will bring a whole... The same thing with the book about the man who walked between the towers, that adults have this whole resonance of September 11th in their heads that I don't think most children have. And at the same time, they don't have the historical awareness of the Holocaust. But whether that helps or hinders the book...
Remains to be seen.
Yeah, I don't know.
So what are we telling mums and dads and aunts and uncles then? To only look at those silver and gold labels with... As a bit of advice?
I think that the most important thing that they can remember is how they themselves read. That too often when we go to select books for kids, we think, oh, here, this is a good message. Oh, this is about the environment. The environment, that's an important thing. Do you read that way? I mean, do you read because something is good for you?
Sometimes, but then I do a radio program, I have to.
We don't read because it's good for us.
Right.
And neither should children have to do that either. That, you know, everyone's there to have a good time.
Yeah.
And that's not to say they can't enjoy serious books. Of course, serious books are there to be enjoyed, but it's not a lesson. It's not supposed to be work.
Although books are sometimes places where you can introduce social ideas to kids. But, Eden, do you share
Better
Rogers?
You than me.
Yeah? No, I'm asking the question. I mean, there are lots of books out there like that. Should we look at them twice?
It's the question of what's a library book and what's a gift.
Mm.
What's a book that you read for the information that you get one time through and you really needed it? It was a rainy afternoon and you really needed to know about cloud formations and why rain falls in certain seasons and not in others. And you got all that and you put the book back on the shelf.
Right.
And then there are the books that you need to read over and over again late at night. By yourself, just because of the way one scene works or one line resonates and tickles mm-hmm. you funny. And that's a very private and important pleasure, just the way adults read.
And also recognize that that book about the clouds could be that book
Absolutely.
For a particular child.
Absolutely. There's that wonderful Cloudmaker book that I loved about the little boy who looked at the clouds, taught you all about cloud formations. Terrific book.
I want to thank you both for coming in. I can't believe our hour has passed. Eden Ross Lipson, thank you again
for
being with
us.
Eden Ross Lipson, children's book editor of the New York Times. Roger Sutton, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Roger is editor-in-chief of the Horn Book Magazine. And Connection listeners, just a reminder, our website, www.theconnection.org, will have forum pages where you can share your ideas about books and why they work and why they don't, but also a chance to look at some of the images and read some of the text of the books that we've been discussing on the program today. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.